So it's great to see you all, and we are sort of midsummer in this series of Psalms that we just sort of quickly flicking through. And it's interesting, as people have picked up on the Psalms and where we're going with them and which ones we're using, how people have sort of then dropped me a text or an email or something suggesting what their favourite Psalm is, whether that's like, would you do this one? Or whether it's just, yeah, I like the idea of where you're going. So let's just read this amazing psalm together. Well, I'll read it. You follow. It's on the screen here. And it's Psalm 91. And then just want to paint a few pictures around this morning. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely he will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and your rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. You will only observe with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. If you say, the Lord is my refuge, and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you. No disaster will come near your tent. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent. Then he almost pauses. Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call on me and I will answer him. And I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. Wow! All right. That's decent, that. Could go quite into that, like, you know. I get a bit of a chemical reaction when it comes to, I'm not a historian, but I just love like stately homes, cathedrals, castles, them sort of places. And a couple of weeks, I'm sure many of you have been here, but a couple of weeks ago, we went for the first time to Blenheim Palace, a few days after Buckingham Palace. I've got to say Blenheim wins because I didn't get my knighthood at the, no, don't. And but one of the things that really sort of caught my imagination as we walked around Blenheim Palace, as all you know, I'm a big Churchill fan, and there's a lot of history there tied up with it. But in a number of the sort of main rooms, there are these tapestries. If you've been, you'll know what I mean. Now, the size of this is probably, I would guess, half to two-thirds of that whole wall on that side there. They are massive. There's a number of them, and they depict some of the great battles that have been fought throughout the years as a result of the various, you know, Earl and Marquis that have sort of lived in the house. But what fascinated me wasn't so much just the tapestry, as spectacular as they are, but actually the element of what goes on because of something being as old as it is. Some of these are like 200 years old. And on the headpiece that we had on, this woman who was one of the curators of Blenheim Palace went into this incredible description, and I was like in the zone. Because this description was that every few years, what they do is they unpin these tapestries from the wall. And you're talking something like, I say, probably two-thirds that wall there. And then over a period of time, because of the delicate nature and the sort of how valuable these things are, they go through a six-month process. They're taken out somewhere, I think they said into Belgium, and they're stretched out, and there's this fine machine that just sprays very gently water through the whole thing. Then it has to be stretched and dried out, and then they spend a lot of time where some people go and check, are you ready for this, check every inch of fabric right throughout this whole thing. because there's different mixes of wool and cotton and weave within this, and because of the tension of different weaves, they sort of pull against each other and can create gaps. And so there's these people who sit there, just not the sort of thing I could do. I'd just be like, make another one, like, you know. They spend a lot of time just delicately strengthening the bits of weave so that it can sit back on the wall for another few years until they need to do it again. It's called restoration. Thank you. Hear an echo over there. Restoration. Why do I say that? Because one of the things that we understand and know and believe very strongly about God is that He is a God of restoration. However, if you read the Bible, the Psalms, the Old Testament, and the New Testament takes it up in another momentum, they're all written with a great sense of some future expectation. There's a hope tied into them that weaves through everything that God is doing. It's not just about the here and now. It's actually about something that I'm looking forward to. You see, God has promised throughout His Word that He will make all things new. And so it's a summer's morning, without getting too technical, theological, anything like that, it's almost like we live between two worlds. You know, if you wander around a graveyard, you'll see those stones and there's a date, you know, 1920-2000. The key bit is the almost irrelevant bit, it's the dash. Beginning, end, but that dash represents the life that this person has lived for all those years and the things they've done and the memories that they've made. God says, I will make all things new. The two worlds that we live between are the Genesis and Revelation. Genesis, where God creates everything. It's just absolutely wonderful. Even God looks and He's very proud of the work that He's done. Sin affects it all, and we live in that almost Middle Earth, without getting a bit Lord of the Rings here. That Middle Earth that's cursed and tainted by sin and all the effects of that and all that we're battling with as Christian people, to the point where you get to Revelation and God talks about, I am going to make a new heaven and a new earth. Behold, I will make all things new. Wow. We are part of that excitement. We're not just here to battle through all the things that are part of life and existence and torment now. Part of our life in God is the eternity that we live for, that's living in our lives right now. Wow. And even in the Psalms that we read, the two or three that we've covered already, this one and other Psalms, although they don't perhaps put it in the language I'm explaining it now, there is a sense of it might be painful now, it might be hurtful now, there might be tension now, but actually I trust in a God who has promised not just to restore and get it back to reasonable condition, but at some point or other, He's going to make all things new. Wow! Now, this psalm really sort of gets a bit of a hold of that. You see, we prefer to put our hope in what we know. And that makes good sense because, you know, that's the way that we are trained as human beings. To sort of put our mind and our trust in the unknown is not always easy. We've been taught as Western people to read the small print, fine detail, so that actually what we're committing ourselves to, we know every fine thing, so that if something happens, we can nail them for it. It's not the way God works, I'm afraid. You know that when you committed your life to Him, there's a sense of you don't get a lot of small print, fine detail. Think of the great characters of the Bible and the journey that they went on. Abraham, when God calls him to go to another land, and he's like, could you give me a postcode or give me a bit of a picture of where it's going to be? Is it nice, warm? No, mate. No small print, fine detail. But there's a sense of future hope. This psalm, let's go back to it. It's just genius because it's not about actually life is easy and once we meet God, you know, all's okay. That isn't what that is saying because it talks about in the I will. But because of time this morning, I just want to get hold of one key thing, and it's a repeat in this psalm. Verse 1, you got it right there. I love this. What a great image this creates. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Then in verse 9, there's almost a repeat of that. If you say, the Lord is my refuge, and you make the Most High your dwelling. It's as if the writer here who's putting this together and creating something of it is like midway sort of says, I need to remind people this isn't just some vague promise that all is okay and all will be well. Actually, there's a condition that goes with this. Now, let me go through these here. Forgive me for this. I rarely quote the King James Bible. But actually, one or two people here were brought up on it. It's not the Yorkshire Bible, you know, thus thou, hey lad, ecky thump. But actually, here is one verse that is pretty, I really like what it says. So the top one is the NIV. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Then one that a lot of people are reading now, the Passion Translation. If you've not read it, get a copy of the Passion Translation. When you sit enthroned under the shadow of Shaddai, you are hidden in the strength of God Most High. King James. Boop, boop, boop. He, whoa. Steady on. He that dwelleth, and this is the word, in the secret place. Ah. He that dwells in the secret place of the Most High will rest. Shall abide under the shadow. Mix them up now. Under the shadow of the Almighty. If you get hold of that, the rest of the promise of this psalm that Vanessa's just intimated to us actually comes into play. If you dwell, sit, rest, wow. And all I want to do just for the few minutes I've got left is I want you to capture that statement and try and, if I were to ask you to draw a picture of it right now and give you some colored pencils like the kids have got there, what sort of image would you create of what that means to you? You see, let's just pick a couple of the words before we bring this to a conclusion. What does it mean to dwell in the shelter or in the secret place of the Most High? God is our first resort, our last resort, and everything in between. We don't visit him. He lives with us. But if you get the idea, we all understand what these terms mean. If we understand what a shadow is, I can see a shadow under the chairs there where the light's coming down and the light can't quite get through the base of that chair and it's created a shadow. But to be in somebody's shadow, here's some logic for you. You've got to be fairly close to them. That's deep. Oh, write that down, Wendy. If you're going to be in somebody's shadow, you've got to be close to them. What is it to be in the shelter, in the secret place? You've all watched spy movies. You know about secrets, about hiding. You know, when the kids were young and you played hide and seek all over the house and they were stood just behind the curtain with half the body sticking out, I'm hiding. And you have to do the, oh, where are you? Is that just me? Am I like a nutter of a dad? That's, my kids are saying, hopefully, don't ask them that. The secret place, the shadow. What is my secret place? The secret place is almost a place that we create where hopefully nobody can sort of really invade that. We only allow people we want into that space to come along there. Let's simplify this. Prayer for me, say, Steve, what is prayer? One of my answers would be it's a conversation that began the day that I met Jesus with him. It's not a last resort. It's not, oh gosh, you know. It's just like the day that Jane and I met and we began conversation that led to marriage, that's led to all the, you know, the years of relationship together. It's the same with God. I met him and a conversation began that goes on day by day, hour by hour. There's times we need to sit down and talk intimately and deeply, sort stuff out. There's times when, you know, little bits of language goes on and we just catch up as we go along. But the whole thing is a walking relationship and a communication. But it's me and him in the secret place together. You're not listening, man. Here's a bit another advice. People often say to me, how do I improve my prayer life? One simple answer, buy a dog. Sarah? Yeah. Because on a morning when I'm walking around Stowpool in the cathedral when there's nobody around and I'm sharing my angst to God, you can ask Callie all you want. She ain't going to tell you anything. Why? Because it's my secret place. And all I want to do this morning is to encourage you in that. You see, when my kids were born, and as they grew up, I would do this often, and they'll tell you about this. I would sit with them, and, you know, sometimes in moments when things were not going quite right, and I would say, as your dad, as much as is in my power, I will not let anything spiritually, physically, or emotionally hurt you. As much as is in my powers are very limited. And, you know, it's like when you send them off into the big wide world to be all that God is calling them to be, and you trust that all you've implanted in the life is going to be okay. You make them that promise. I did as their dad. Psalm 91 is that same conversation between you and God. He's saying to you, things will go on. Life has stuff that surrounds it, but within that, as much as is in my power, nothing physically, emotionally, spiritually will harm you. However, there's a place you need to be for that to really kick in. It's not just some random promise like some fortune cookie, because it's about him who dwells close to God in the shadow of the Almighty, in the secret place. So, let me bring this to a conclusion. Then we're going to hear something very exciting. Where's your secret place? Have you actually got one? I forgot to put the picture up there, but Buckingham Palace 3 days before Blenheim went. You're going through the rooms, and in the stateroom, the dining room, where all the great heads of state have been wined and dined, I picked up on my headphones because I noticed everybody was looking at this irrelevant corner here. And it said, if you look in the corner where the mirror is to the left of whatever, there's a secret, I love stuff like this, doorway that leads through to all the private quarters of Liz and, sorry, our queen. And I just love the thought, I'm stood there, and, you know, as some head of state, many of them who've stood in that very room, suddenly from nowhere appears Prince Charles. He's walked through the wall. Wow. Secret. Not a secret anymore, because on this headphone they told me where it was. I'm sorry, your secret's out to millions of people who have visited. But just the idea that hidden behind that door is the person that you want to see, the reason why you've been invited to this banquet. I just invite you, with all the promise that comes with this amazing psalm, to make sure, guys, come on, let's sing this, Living Hope. To make sure that you are locked into the shelter, the shadow, the secret place. You and God, no invasion, no intrusion. You can share what you like. You can talk how you want. God can communicate with you. You can let all your joys, your party celebrations, you can let all your angst and your anger and your worries and your concerns, me and God together. And as you dwell in that place day by day, don't move away. Look for the shadow. Keep in it. And as day by day goes by, then God says, as you dwell in that place, as you stick there, Steve, there, in all the mess and the that goes on around, I'm looking after you, mate, because we've got this thing going together. Let's stand together. This is a great song, Living Hope. Sing it in response before Vanessa comes back and we take a few minutes to hear a great story. Have this as an act of worship. My living hope. Sing it to him. If you're uncomfortable lifting your hands, do it anyway. As an act of surrender, God, right now, forget the other crowd of people around me here. That secret place is where I want to be. I'm not hiding myself from the world, but my relationship with you is so intimate and personal. We're passionate, we're in love, we want to be together. There's an erotic sense of me and God that I don't ever want to lose. And if I've never had it, I want to create it in there. Because whoever dwells in the secret place of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Come on, let's sing this.